Well, in today's show, let's give J.R. Stewart his due. It is December the 4th, 2017. And if you knew J.R. Stewart, you knew that he was the very best. Buried this weekend after a horrific crash, which took his life after a very honorable career in law enforcement. Struck down in the prime of life by two crazed drug addicts who admitted smoking meth and heroin earlier in the day. Run over near NMSU, the two escaped criminals drove the wrong way on I-25, then cut back up to the service road. There, J.R. Stewart on his brand new Harley Davidson. He didn't know it, but he was about to meet his appointment with destiny. Ironically, Stewart died on a motorcycle after spending decades on a police bike. Anyone who knew J.R. enjoyed his company. Gregarious, funny, easygoing, and kind-hearted, J.R. made a huge impact on Las Cruces. J.R. gave Sheriff Kiki Vigil a run for his money, coming in a close second in the last election. He was again running against Kiki, and many believed he would do better this time. As a matter of fact, he announced on my show a few months ago, but if the viewing and rosary and funeral were any indication, J.R. was a shoo-in for the next election. Oh well, the good Lord has a way of interrupting the best laid plans of even the best men. Go rest high on that mountain, J.R. You truly were the best kind of officer there ever was. Now, got a little background for you on J.R., and I'm very good friends with J.R.'s brother, so it was kind of a double blow for me. I knew J.R. from him running for office and coming on my show, and then I also know him through Chris Stewart, so we would definitely ask for your prayers for the family. It's just the kind of thing that you don't ever really get over, losing someone that close to you. All right, so this is from the Sun News. J.R. Ray Stewart, 61, of Las Cruces, New Mexico, entered eternal life on November 27, 2017. Born in El Paso, Texas, son of John Raymond and Virginia Stewart, J.R. graduated from Las Cruces High School and earned an associate degree in criminal justice from New Mexico State University. He served his country in the U.S. Marine Corps for 4 years. And was very proud of his military background. J.R. then joined the police academy and became a Las Cruces police officer in 1979, retiring 35 years afterwards. He was loved and respected in our community. J.R. served his country and community with honor and volunteered much of his time to those organizations he held dear to his heart. A member of the Fraternal Order of Police, FOP, Lodge 8, and National FOP Trustee. Also a member of the following organizations: 4th Degree Knight of the with the Knights of Columbus Assembly number 0684, and also Knights of Columbus Council number 1226, American Legion Post number 10, lifetime member of the Disabled American Veterans, Moose Lodge number 2081, Amaduras LEMC, and Los Indigenous de Nuestra Señora Guadalupe. He was also a communicant at Our Lady of Guadalupe and St. Genevieve Catholic Church. And in 77, he met his wife, Rosie Hernandez Stewart, married on November 11, 2000, and they were inseparable and lived an adventurous life. J.R. leaves behind his wife Rosie, daughter Ashley, her husband Jeremy. He also leaves his mother Virginia, his only sister Tika, her husband Jack, and brothers Wani and wife Brenda, Andre and wife Debbie, Chris and wife Esther, Jimmy and wife Debbie, grandchildren Brody and Kennedy. Other survivors include father-in-law Hilario Hernandez, brother-in-law Polo and wife Mary, Tony and wife Roseanne, sister-in-law Donna, and her husband George, as well as numerous nieces, nephews, and godchildren, preceded in death by Father John Raymond Stewart and mother-in-law Ann P. Hernandez. Okay, so I don't know what to tell you about the rosary, but it was, it had a feeling of an ominous feeling. It also had a very special feeling because of who the person was being buried. And it was, I don't know, there were just so many people there. I would have reckoned for the funeral more than 1,000, and the same for the rosary. Now, it just, I don't know how to put it other than to say that it seemed like the people that were there were in unison, in agreement, that basically he was a good guy. There was no, you know, it was just seemed like the kind of a situation where if you went up to each person, they'd have something positive. Nobody was holding anything back negative. That's how it seemed. Now, I didn't see the sheriff there, and JR had run against him previously and was running again. But from what I understood, he had come to the rosary, and somebody said they saw him at the funeral, although I don't think he was there for the burial. But, you know, be that as it may. So when JR was hit, it was my understanding that the vehicle was going about 80, 85 miles an hour. It had come off the highway, gone up on the side of the road, up through a fence, and then cut in on the road opposite of I-25, on the other side of I-25. It was out of control, and so when it hit a JR, it was going 80, 85 miles an hour. When they got there, from what I understand, his head was in his face, everything was in seemingly pretty good condition, but he was hit so hard that he really did bleed out. And so, terrible. They did something that I think was excellent. They took his body on a tour of the state. They drove it up and around and then brought it back down. There was a viewing. He was pronounced dead at Mountain View Regional. Then there was a viewing after he got back from this tour. And he was back on Wednesday. The tour went through. The body was escorted by law enforcement in a procession that spanned five counties from OMI in Albuquerque to Baca's Funeral Chapel in Las Cruces. So the procession made its way south and included officers from the following agencies: New Mexico State Police, police departments from TRC, Socorro and Hatch, Doniana County Sheriff's Office, and the U.S. Border Patrol. And there were a lot of cops there. Now, the funeral, the rosary was at 7:30, December the 1st, St. Genevieve's Catholic Church, 100 South Espina. And the mass was then celebrated the next day, 10 a.m., same place. And so it was really something. I mean, when the body was taken from the St. Genevieve's, it was put onto a chopper hearse, which I had never even seen one before. It was red. And it looked like a motorcycle with a sidecar, except on the side was a flat panel of metal. And that's where the casket was, with the flag draped on it, the American flag. So they brought it, and then there was the service, graveside service, and then he was interred. But there was a lot of people there. Anyway, I wanted to make sure that I recognized the great service that JR had given this county. And really a nice guy. I mean, always with a smile on his face, always with a joke, you know, that kind of a person. So whatever else I could tell you, I mean, I think you had to be there to see the, just all the people that came out. And I don't know, even though it was a tragedy, there was something that felt right about the way that the people showed up and honored him. The people lined the streets for the procession from Baca. I mean, for a guy that was retired, I thought it was remarkable, and it said a lot about our community, and it's, of course, said a lot about JR. And unfortunately, we'll never get to see what kind of a sheriff he would have been, but I just believe that he would have been a great sheriff because he really cared about people before anything else. So, in any event, let's get on to some top stories for you, first of all, here. Now, you first of all heard that Michael Flynn had pled guilty to lying to the FBI, and now there's some disagreement as to whether this is the end or whether it's going to be, deeper. But a couple of people that I have a lot of respect for, including Alan Dershowitz, the youngest professor in the history of Harvard Law, said that it doesn't look to him like there could be anything much else, because in agreeing that he lied to the FBI, he's made himself a perjurer, and therefore he needs to, in theory, get up and accuse other people of lying or of doing bad things. And it just seems unlikely that they would find that charge to convict him of and then say, by the way, we need you to tell all the truth. So I think it's my impression as an attorney that Trump is going to survive this, his family is going to survive this. And so now what's going on? Well, other news out there is that the GOP passed their tax package and were able to get the things that they needed so that everybody would be happy. And so while the left is very upset about this, I think that the fact of the matter is that it's a huge, huge win for Trump. Now, Trump is right now at 62% negative. I don't see him going any farther, deeper into negativity, because I think that this whole thing is going to wash out. The Russia investigation will be seen in the future as being much ado about nothing. And so there's a lot to cover in that, of course. Now, other news. Some other news that I would mention to you is that the NFL appears to be dying. It's like someone who's injured one of their limbs and the limb is turning the wrong color and getting ready to drop off. It's just terrible. There's continued pictures from the NFL from various games, and it shows in the beginning when I saw these pictures, it looked like maybe a quarter of the seats were empty. And then a third, and now maybe half, and in some of these stadiums it looks like more. Half to three quarters of the seats are empty. Now those seats are very important for income for these teams, even though they get billions of dollars through this joint agreement for cable coverage. And I don't see it getting any better, because the NFL has taken the stand that they've got to, belly up to fight racism. Now, once you put it into that kind of a framework, you realize you're fighting against something like fighting against ignorance, fighting against illiteracy, fighting against, something that can never be fully vanquished. The NFL gave in, and now they have to give in every time. So one of the interesting things in this story is that Let me tell you in a minute about this, but it's remarkable what I found out from the history of, and I wish I had the Daily Show going on too, because I'd really flip your wig with some more very, very to the point reporting in detail on this. But Roger Goodell's, his father was a senator. And as Senator Goodell, he turned out to be a pretty liberal guy. So let me get into that a little bit later. Now, from New Mexico News, billboard calling church fake news causing a stir, November 30th. And it's on I-25. It's all fake news. And happy holidays from American atheists. A lot of people are upset by that. Homeowner shoots thief in both legs during burglary. Unbelievable. November 29th, police say a homeowner took matters into his own hands after two men broke into his garage. He heard a noise. He went over with his gun. And guy's name is Warren Wild up in Albuquerque. And when he went out to the garage, he heard something. There's a .40 caliber Glock handgun in his hand. He said that he shot a 40-round caliber to get their attention and to drive him out. But so he said that he was in the backyard and he was threatened by these two. So one of the two people, he shot in once in each leg. A guy by the name of Serrano Urias. Rodolfo Serrano Urias. So, you know, it's the castle doctrine. You're allowed to protect your home. Now, an 18-year-old Santa Fe Police Department is been arrested after threatening to shoot the principal. 18-year-old. Tensions high in the community following mass shooting threats against the school earlier. And then Alejandro Valle admitted to school security on Wednesday that he wanted to follow the Santa Fe High School principal home after school and shoot him with an AR-14. And he was agitated after the principal, Morano, told him he couldn't step on SFHS, Santa Fe High School grounds, to visit his girlfriend. Valle attends nearby Early College Opportunity School. And so, court documents show that there was a .22 caliber rifle found in his truck. And so he was arrested for carrying an unlawful deadly weapon on school premises. So anyway, thank God nothing happened from that. Now, some more interesting news. Doña Ana County Undersheriff placed on leave. He is Ken Roberts, of course, and placed on administrative leave last month, and now he has been, I guess, suspended pending the outcome of an investigation and a determination. Now, I heard some rumors that he was being accused of sexual harassment, but I don't see that in this article, and it may not be true, so don't take my word for it. In the meantime, an all-time high set for homicides in Albuquerque. Police say a 17-year-old who was murdered makes it the 71st homicide in Albuquerque this year. And this is from November 30th. It's the most ever. A record set in 1996. So things are bad up in Albuquerque when it comes to law and order. All right. Other stuff to get into, and I do apologize for not getting a show together for you. I was really trying to kind of rest myself etc. But I found that it was a kind of a never-ending undertaking. Okay, so some of the other stuff that's going on includes the economy, which is now growing at 3.3%, and it's the highest rate of growth in the last, say, 10 years since the Great Recession started, which is good news. Now, according to the Wall Street Journal, the economy has room to grow, which is certainly true. And in another Wall Street Journal article, U.S. economy reaches its potential output for first time in decade. U.S. GDP growth revised up to 3.3% rate for third quarter with more business investment in equipment and software and heftier government spending. So that's all good news. Now, according to QC Times, in the last 8 months, the U.S. economy gained traction, and the national unemployment rate is 4.1%, a 17-year low. Consumer confidence index was just reported at 129.5, reflecting a recent level of optimism not seen since November 2000. So a 17-year optimism boost to the benchmark is 100. Anything above that indicates optimism on jobs. So the U.S. has the world's largest economy and creates about a quarter of all global economic production. So it is, and well, compared to China, we're almost twice as big. So the size of the U.S. economy is greater than the combined economies of the next eight largest nations, including China, Japan, Germany, and the United Kingdom. So that's why it is so important for us to grow, because as we grow, the entire world grows. There hasn't been a year of 3% growth rate since 2005. And as people believe China is in the possibility of slowing down because of the unhealthy factors in their economy, we need to keep growing too. Now, switching gears here a little bit back to the previous story, here are some subheadings of details for the Russia investigation. There is a Trump hater on the Mueller team. He's an FBI operative. He was the head of the team. He was also one of the heads of the team that investigated Hillary Clinton. He was having an affair with an attorney, and they were texting each other, and they were trashing Trump. So they also removed the attorney. So the special counsel removed him, but the damage has been done. And of course, we don't know if this guy also was in the tank for Hillary, but he appears to be a Hillary booster along with his girlfriend. Now, they tried to use the Logan Act to entangle Trump on day one. That's according to Byron York. The Obama team tried to do that, but the Logan Act has not really been used. Alan Dershowitz claims that it is really a dead letter because it hasn't been used for so long. House Republicans are preparing contempt actions against the FBI and Department of Justice. Feinstein says obstruction of justice against Trump is building. So it's always something. Now, Feinstein, if you recall, wasn't attacking Trump. Now, she is. I think she's almost 90 years old. They're putting pressure on her. If she's going to get help in California, then she's got to start, you know, carrying some water for these guys. All right. Another weird thing. Jared Kushner gave a speech today, I believe it was, on world peace. And he's one of the people they're going to try to drag into the rest of this investigation. But I think it's agreed that if they had anything with Flynn, it would have been something along the lines of a conspiracy, and he's not charged with conspiracy, therefore he didn't conspire. That seems to be the agreement on that. Other headlines. Include a story of a Mexican guy who was deported 20 times. He returned to Oregon. He assaulted a woman. He tied her up and raped her and beat her. She was bleeding. She was in her 50s or 60s. And during the hearing for him, one of the people there said, "You don't deserve to go to prison. You deserve to go to hell." And this guy smiles and says, "I'll see you in hell." And then as he's leaving this hearing, he says to the whole family, "I'll see you in hell." I mean, it's just incredible to me what has been done in the name of immigration or immigrants, and the country has been put upon to treat these people all as if they're family members. And it's a very sad thing to look at, and I think a lot of Hispanics are totally opposed to it as well. And that's just how it seems to me. Now, looking for more headlines for you. All right, here is another elephant or giant ape in the room. Sexual harassment. It's unbelievable how many people are being charged or have admitted to sexual harassment, and including rape. Now, the most prominent person who has been charged is, of course, Matt Lauer. He was the highest paid, I believe the highest paid journalist in the country, getting paid $25 million a year at NBC for their morning show. And the morning show was worth something like $500 million a year in revenue. And so he was charged with sexual harassment, and it turned out to be sexual abuse. And so the most interesting story, the most horrifying story that was told, is Matt Lauer had a button on his desk so that closed the door, and he had called one woman in who had stated that he had made passes at her many times, and she had always resisted. She was married, but he said, "Bring this lady to his office." So he brought into the office. He hits the button and locks the door and says, "Undo your blouse." So I don't believe that she agreed to do this. I think it was she reluctantly decided it was her best chance at survival to undo her blouse. So she undid her blouse, and then Matt Lauer comes behind her and bends her over a chair and proceeds to have flagrant delicto, congress, whatever you want to call it. He essentially rapes her until she passes out and she wakes up on the floor with her pants halfway between her knees and her ankles. And Matt Lauer's assistant then takes her to a nurse. So he is fired, and there's many stories of him making passes at women, making statements. Katie Couric said that he always pinched her on the butt. And when the Winter Olympics were going on, that the last one he had stayed there and fooled around. And his wife, who is some model, some beauty queen, apparently was already separated from him, even though they're living in the same house on Long Island. Matt Lauer has an apartment in the city. And so now the wife, now that he's been fired, has relocated back to where I think she grew up, which is the Netherlands. In the meantime, it comes out that he had offered her $5 million to keep the appearance of a happy relationship. but he had many, many affairs and it hit on many women. All right. So who else? I mean, here is the list. Ben Affleck has been accused and admitted to grabbing a woman's breast and during an interview in 2003, although the woman says it's no big deal. Although he admitted he acted inappropriately, the head of Amazon Studios, Roy Price, has stepped down for sexually harassing females. Producer Bob Weinstein, I don't even need to go into, detail, but he'd apparently done all kinds of crazy things and had raped some women. And now, former editor of the New Republic, Leon Wieselter, he's out making passes. Celebrity chef John Besh, never heard of him. Director James Toback, out. These are all sexual harassment. Former editorial director at Vox Media, Lockhart Steele, gone. Tech figure Robert Scoble, out. Former Microsoft employee. High ranking. Animator, producer, director Chris Savino, gone. And he created the series The Loud House. Magician David Blaine, accused of repeated rape. Director Roman Polanski is famous for his activities. Musician R. Kelly recently accused of keeping a harem against their will of underage women. Looking for some more. Now, this is a few days old, so you'll have to forgive me. Former President George H.W. Bush accused of grabbing women's butts, but I do wonder if... You have to wonder if that's... was because of his age. Fashion designer Gianni Versace made passes at the actor Kevin Sorbo, who was a male model at one point and acted in the TV show Hercules. Another famous one, Mark Halperin in Free Fall, assaulting women. And E! News correspondent Ken Baker, out, same thing. Director and producer Rick Nahara, gone. Actor Kevin Spacey, a remarkable story in which the man who said that Spacey tried to rape him as a boy was, I believe, 14. Kevin Spacey was, I think, 22 or 24 at the time, and was involved in a relationship with the kid in which Kevin Spacey played the receptive role, and then at one point he tried to turn it around, and the young man was able to resist, apparently. But there are apparently hundreds and hundreds of men, possibly thousands, that Kevin Spacey either assaulted or tried to assault, raped, etc. Actor Jeremy Piven, accused by several women. Brett Ratner assaulted numerous women, apparently. Actor Dustin Hoffman assaulted a woman, supposedly. Steven Seagal, apparently, supposedly, harassing and assaulting. Actor Ed Westwick. Now, here's another funny story. The guy, he was the Asian guy on Star Trek, was supposedly had brought somebody back to his apartment a number of years ago and sexually assaulted him. Comedian and director Louis C.K., who was always on the edge of propriety in his act, a number of women said that he had done either unacceptable things or had actually assaulted him. Actor George Takei from Star Trek assaulted a Scott R. Bruton, a model. Showrunner Mark Schwann out. Actor Jeffrey Tambor, a very, very funny guy, is dropped out of Transparent. Senator Al Franken, another interesting story where Al Franken had supposedly kissed a woman who was, they were doing some entertainment for the military. And they were on a USO tour and they did this little skit and he had already, they had gotten together to, practice and he had stuck his tongue down her throat. Well, there's a picture that came out of him touching her breast or on the verge of grabbing her breasts, the same woman, Tweeden, I think her name was. And she complained about it. And then he said, I am sorry. And then another woman came out and talked about something that he had done. And then two or three women who had met Franken for a photo op at the Minnesota State Fair, and he had grabbed all their butts individually. And he's still sticking around in there. As a matter of fact, he had a law named after him to fight against sexual assault. I don't see that he makes it, but, what are you going to do? Roy Moore, I heard the story initially. It didn't make any sense that he was at court and a woman came for a divorce and she brought her daughter and said the daughter could stay with Roy Moore, and he supposedly left work to drive her around or drive her home. Didn't make any sense. Still doesn't make any sense. But other stories came out where he was perving on, making passes at young women, and I don't know if it's been established or not, but there's been so much backlash, and there are so many people on the left now that are accused that it doesn't really make any sense to single him out. So I believe he's down 4 points to three, maybe 3 points to the guy that he's running against, but he was down by a lot more. Former Speaker of the Kentucky House of Representatives Jeff Hoover, out. Former Senior Vice President at NPR in charge of news, Michael Oreskes, out. Glenn Thrush, who had lied about Trump and then was hired anyway by the New York Times and now has been accused of assaulting women, and the New York Times is not ready to fire him for some reason. Charlie Rose, another remarkable story, so patrician, so elegant and soft-spoken and Southern, he seemed like the last guy that would pull any shenanigans. And yet, he's got a big house out in Long Island, and he invites the women who work for him to go out there. And then he does something like goes to into his room and then yells the name of the girl out, and then she walks in and he's there taking a shower, or he gets in his robe with nothing underneath it and leaves it open and walks around. And so a number of women, many dozens of women, have been accused by him, and he's quit. And the sad thing is he did some very entertaining and insightful interviews, as anybody who ever watched the Charlie Rose show would know. And Charlie Rose came from very modest background. He was raised by his grandmother and went to Duke, I think Duke undergrad and then Duke Law. But he was, just another one of these stories. And they're all the same. Now, two more have come out that in these last few days, one of which is on John Conyers, the elderly kind of hero of the civil rights movement, has now stepped down as the ranking member of the Judiciary Committee. Nancy Pelosi is telling him he should quit. The story is, even though he's 88 years old, everybody in his office has seen him in his underwear. people have come to visit him. Women have come to visit him. Even the attorney who's the head of ethics in the House said that he had met her, greeted her in his underwear. So apparently the conflict with his wife to a large extent had to do with all of these shenanigans, all these affairs that he had. Now, the last one that I can recall, and I know we're probably up to 40 or 50, Garrison Keillor. Garrison Keillor is the guy that did Prairie Home Companion. He was had already retired, but the fact of the matter is that he had written a defense of Al Franken and sent it into the Washington Post. And because he was under investigation for his own naughty acts, whatever they were, he claims he put his hand on the small of the back of a woman whose shirt had been accidentally pulled up trying to console her, and that it was only later that she had turned him in. But anyway, he's been fired. And I think what do all of these cases have in common? Almost all of them, save a couple, are dealing with people who are pretty far to the left and are heroes of the same people that they're supposed to be protecting, females or what have you. So anyway, if you can imagine being on the show with Kevin Spacey, and he gets fired and the whole show is in, you know, free fall. Well, do you think that these people that get elected and then they are in office and they get accused of sexual harassment, should they be removed? Some people are saying it is you should do this through the ballot box. So, and that's just in this country. There are people in other countries that are getting removed as well. Another one I just running across at NBC News. Russell Simmons, hip-hop impresario. And the claim is that he has raped a number of women, including the daughter. I can't remember if it was the daughter. I think it was the daughter of Sidney Lumet, the writer and the screenwriter and director. Also the granddaughter of singer Lena Horne, this girl, daughter of Sidney Lumet, granddaughter of Lena Horne, and she claims that her name is Jenny Lumet. She claims that Simmons forced her into a sexual encounter in 1991 when she was 24. And it was really kind of a heartbreaking story because she had had a lot of respect for him up to that point. Now, other people I haven't even mentioned, Matt Zimmerman, vice president for booking at NBC News, Andrew Kreisberg, executive producer of the CW show, which I think is, I guess, cable. Looking for anybody else here. But it's a stunning number, and it's going to grow, obviously, as these type of things do. There's going to be more and more coming out. And I believe that the guy, somebody who's not listed here, the guy who was in the movie Jaws, and I guess George W. Bush, Seven Accusers, Terry Richardson, the filmmaker, or the photographer, pardon me, Multiple Accusers. Wow, James Toback, 238 accusers. You think he's innocent? Bob Weinstein, brother. Oliver Stone, accused by just one. Roy Price, director of Amazon Studio. So, anyway, can't even remember what I was going to say. There's just so many. It's confusing to see that many accusations that are put out there. It's very sad. But at the same time, you have to say it is comforting, at least, to say that it seems like these women are going to be listened to now. And so here's the question that I would ask for you. We went through a period of being a very conservative nation, and men and women were together when they were married. You know, people didn't live together, and for the most part, I don't think men and women slept together before marriage. This is many years ago, of course. But there would have been a level of gentility in between the sexes. Things were not nearly as familiar. But women's rights would have been taken care by the fact that, you know, no society is going to be free of assault or rape or anything. But to have a conservative approach to sex means that you couldn't have people you weren't married to staying overnight at your house, that the neighbors would be very, very suspicious, and you'd ruin your reputation. So there's an expectation of the famous, celebrities, the powerful, that they not hit on women inappropriately. How are you going to do that in a deeply secularized culture where belief in God is no longer cited as the reason that you would do anything? How are you going to put the genie back in the box or in the bottle? How are you going to get the horses back into the corral once they've run out? It seems to me the only hope, and this is coming from, I think, a realistic as opposed to a naive point of view, the only way to reverse the damage that's been done to sex in America is to have a revival, to go back to our roots. And the reason that I say that is people have to be motivated. If there's porn everywhere, and if there is no downside to people sleeping together whenever they want to, except for the possibility of a sexual assault, how are you going to have healthy vitality in this area? So marriage has fallen on hard times. Many women are having children out of wedlock. And the upshot is that now we're going through a period of reckoning where many women are saying that they were assaulted and nobody would listen to them. But if you're expecting men to become repentant when we've already trained them or told them that sex is something that everybody has the right to anytime they want to, as long as it's a consenting partner, how are you going to, at the same time, get these people to be overly sensitive? So you might come up with new rules, but I don't think you're ever going to be able to deal with it until it gets back to square one. That's just my opinion. Now, fake news. What is fake news? Fake news is whenever there is a false claim that's put out there, right? Well, when ABC's Brian Ross got up and broke the news that Michael Flynn had admitted that he had lied and had been told to communicate with Russia, everybody went crazy. But then it turns out many hours later that ABC came back, Brian Ross came back and said, actually, he was told, Michael Flynn said he was told to communicate with Russia after Trump was elected. So now Brian Ross, who has been around for quite a while, has been put on suspension for 4 weeks without pay, which is pretty gigantic. But this is a classic example of fake news. News that's misreported so that it is more harmful to the person that they are going after. And, you know, there's a certain number of people who will have only seen that headline who don't know now. And it's no wonder that Trump's numbers are down, right? Because, I mean, all of this bad news comes out and it's misreported and it's an absolute joke, you know? Now, Alan Dershowitz, as I mentioned earlier, is stating that there was no, basically, no credibility as a witness. Flynn doesn't have it now that he's admitted to lying. So he's not going to be able to go out and knock people down with his statements because he's perjured himself in the eyes of the people that are putting this stuff together. And Trump himself is saying, I told Flynn to talk to Russia because he was the former, well, he was the national security advisor at that time. He said that's his job. And, you know, Trump is saying no harm, no foul. In the meantime, people like the individual who does Morning Joe and his one of his favorite guests, Donnie Deutsch, calling the president a psychopath who has to be removed under any means available. And so they're all going back to the original attack against Trump was even before he got into office. He's totally unacceptable. He will be a tyrant. He will be a monster. He is totally unacceptable. And that's why when you see an article by somebody like Howie Carr that the opposition to Trump is a hate cult, and let me just read a little bit of this for you. The world was turned upside down 1 year ago tonight, and this is obviously a few weeks ago. Donald J. Trump won the presidential election and millions of moon bats had exploded. Since about 11:30 a.m. on November 8th, 2016, these smug, sanctimonious know-it-alls, Hillary, Madonna, Harvey, Weinstein, etc., have been so utterly over the top in their behavior that they've almost become a cult, maybe even a religion. And I agree. I couldn't agree anymore. All right, so let's see anything else here you might find of note. So anyway, I do apologize. I have been off the reservation. I've been off the beaten path. And no excuse. No excuse for not being with the program. Oh, man. But it was, I got to tell you, it was nice to not have to get up for the show anymore. It was just a real blessing. And I did catch up on some of my sleep. Oh, okay. So here is the details of your tax deal. Corporate rate delay. One of the most, and this is from the USA Today, one of the most significant sections of the bill is the massive tax cut for corporations. House and Senate bill both take the top corporate tax rate from 35 to 20%. However, the Senate cut would come in 2019, but the House bill would have it be next year, 2018. Conservatives see no reason to delay it. All right, another part, elimination of the estate tax. Currently, estates up to $5.5 million are exempt from taxes, but both the House and Senate bill raise the number to $10 million. And then the House bill would increase the exemption above $10 million each year after next year and totally eliminate the estate tax after 6 years. That's what they also call a death tax, right? All right, one of the most significant developments, repeal of the individual mandate. And so the individual mandate is the cost for having no insurance. And that went for every year it went up till now I think it's like $750, which is kind of sad when you think about it, because when people can't afford insurance, how are they going to afford $750? All right, immigration. Don't really understand what they've put here, but and ending individual rates for brackets, credit deductions, and individuals and families permanent, making those. Oh, anyway, I'll have to study it some more, but now, let me see here what else I can dig out for you very quickly. See what the science section has. And also, we got to be ready for war with North Korea, possibly. I mean, what should we do about that? What's your opinion? I'm looking for my science stories. All right, so, well, anyway, I just about out of time here, so I do appreciate that you tune in, and I know it's going to be small until we get some more shows in there, but thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you have everybody has a great year next year, but we'll end it up right here. Kelly O'Connell, and it is the continuation of the old show, AM Las Cruces. Have a great day. It is December 4th, 2017. Ciao.